Ilse built a fire in the hearth with hands that moved without asking permission from her mind. She stacked the dry kindling from the corner pile, laid the split logs at an angle, struck flint against steel, and held the spark until it caught. The cottage, which had not known warmth in months, exhaled as the flames took hold, a long, slow release of trapped damp and old paper. Smoke curled up the chimney with a sound like a sigh. Jaren sat on the stool by the window and watched her work. He did not thank her for the fire. He did not thank her for the door. He sat very still, as though movement might provoke whatever had brought him here to follow him through the threshold as well. His face was a map of recent violence, dried blood along the jawline, a split lip that had begun to scab, bruising purple at his temple like a storm cloud pressing against skin. His cloak hung from his shoulders in tatters, the wool soaked through with whatever rain had fallen beyond the hollow's edge. Ilse set a tin cup on the table between them and poured water from the earthenware jug. She placed it within his reach and went to the larder. She took out bread, cheese, and a wedge of salt pork. She did not sit. She stood by the hearth, watching the fire, watching him watch the fire. 7 years of solitude had taught her how to hold a silence without filling it. She could wait. She could always wait. When he finally moved, it was only to lift the cup. His hands shook not from cold, she decided, but from something deeper, something that had settled into his bones and refused to leave. He drank. Water ran down his chin and into the collar of his shirt. He set the cup down and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. "You should lock the door," he said. His voice was rough, worn flat by days of speaking over wind. "I locked it when you arrived." That wasn't enough. Ilse considered this. She walked to the door, checked the iron bolt, and drew it shut. Then she returned to the hearth. "It won't matter." Jaren looked at her then, really looked. His eyes were dark, so dark that in the firelight they seemed almost empty, like wells with no bottom. He studied her face the way a traveler studies a map, searching for landmarks he recognized. "You're the keeper," he said. "It wasn't a question." "My uncle was." "He's dead." "Yes." "And now it's you." She didn't answer. The fire popped, sending up a shower of orange sparks that died before they reached the ceiling beams. Somewhere outside, the wind moved through the hollow, and with it came the faintest vibration, the waystones humming, low and constant, the way they always had since Ilse could remember. But underneath the hum, something else, something thinner, sharper, like the absence of a sound rather than a sound itself. Jaren noticed it too. His head tilted slightly, the way a dog tilts its head when it hears a whistle no human can hear. "It's closer tonight," he said quietly. "What is?" He didn't answer immediately. After a moment, he pulled his knees up to his chest and rested his arms on them. He looked smaller, like that less the 30-year-old traveler she'd encountered at dusk, and more something younger, something fragile. The bruising on his face seemed louder against the sudden fragility. "They follow the Pilgrim's Road," he said. His voice dropped, then broke off as though something had taken the middle of the sentence and left only the beginning. He swallowed, looked toward the door, listened. The fire crackled, and for a moment the hollow went utterly still, as though holding its breath. Then the hum returned, fainter than before. He exhaled, slow and shaky. "I've learned not to speak above a whisper. It makes no difference," but he stopped, pressed his palms flat against his knees. "Every night it takes more, first the footsteps, then the voice, last the thoughts, I think, because sometimes I wake and I can't remember what I was going to say." Ilse crossed her arms. "You're saying a silence is following you." "I'm saying it has a hunger," he paused. "I've been walking for 7 years. I started from Marrow's Ford, where the road crosses the river and the water runs black with silt. I was carrying letters, then letters, for the Baron Steward, the same job your uncle gave me. I thought I was doing honest work, delivering words from one place to another. That's all a letter is, isn't it? Just words on paper." He unrolled something from inside his cloak. A bundle of papers, tied with twine. The edges were frayed, the ink faded to brown in places. Ilse recognized the Baron's seal on the top sheet, though it had been broken and remade several times since its original dispatch. "For 7 years," Jaren continued, "I carried those letters, or I tried to. Every week I would walk to the next waystone, wait for the stone to sing, because they do sing, Ilse, they sing when someone approaches, and if you listen closely, you can hear the note change depending on who's coming, but every week I would arrive at the next waystone and find that the letters were gone. Not stolen, not lost. gone, as though they had never existed at all. Ilse felt something tighten in her chest. She kept her face neutral. Letters don't vanish. These did. He set the bundle on the table between them. And then I realized it wasn't just the letters, it was everything. My footsteps behind me would disappear. The sound of my staff on the stones would vanish mid-step. I would speak, and my voice would trail off into nothing, as though the air itself was swallowing it. At first, I thought I was going mad. 7 years alone on a road nobody walks anymore. What else would you do? He laughed, but it was a dry sound, devoid of humor. When did it start? Ilse asked. At Merrow's Ford. The first time I crossed it, I heard singing in the hollow like your uncle heard. I expectant, I thought it was beautiful. Birds, I assumed. Or whined through reeds. But when I turned back, the singing had stopped. And the silence that replaced it had weight. You could feel it pressing against your back like a hand. He leaned forward. The firelight carved shadows into the hollows of his cheeks. I followed the road north because there was nowhere else to go. South was behind me, and the silence was already there, waiting. North was open. Or it had been, until the silence learned to follow. Ilse walked to the window. She pressed her palm against the cold glass and looked out into the darkness. The pilgrim's road stretched away from the cottage, disappearing into the hollow where the stones hummed. She could feel the vibration through the sole of her boot, through the floorboards, through the stone foundation of the cottage itself. It was a steady pulse, ancient and indifferent. But beneath it, fainter, wrong was something else. A gap in the rhythm, a space where the hum should have been but wasn't. How far behind is it? She asked. Jaren was quiet for a long time. When he spoke, his voice had dropped to a whisper. Close enough that I can feel it breathing. Ilse turned from the window. Your uncle knew about this.
Yes.
He wrote about it.
Yes.
In his ledger. Jaren nodded. I read it before I found this place, before I found you. He hesitated. He turned people away. The entries show it clearly. Halloween he turned away a veiled woman who paid 3 coins. Samhain he sent back 2 boys no older than 16. He knew they wouldn't make it. He knew the silence would take them. Ilse's hands curled into fists. She thought of the ledger sitting on the table where she'd left it, its pages filled with her uncle's tight, precise handwriting. She had read those entries and understood them as records of neglect of a man who had grown old and bitter and stopped caring about the travelers who passed his door. But now, looking at Jaren, seeing the raw damage on his face and the terror he carried in his posture like a second cloak, she wondered if she had misunderstood entirely. He didn't turn them away because he was old, Ilse said slowly. He turned them away because he was protecting them. Or because he was protecting the road. Both possibilities sat in the room between them, heavy and unresolved. Ilse went to the larder again and returned with a blanket. She threw it over Jaren's shoulders without ceremony. He didn't resist. He wrapped it around himself with the practiced efficiency of someone who had done this 1,000 times in 1,000 cold places. Where are you going tomorrow? She asked.
North. You can't.
I have to.
Why?
Jaren looked at her with an expression she couldn't read. Not fear, not defiance, something steadier than both.
Because if I stop, it catches me.
That's absurd. He gestured toward the window. Is it? Tell me the stones aren't humming. Tell me you don't feel it, the gap in the sound. Tell me you haven't noticed that the hollow is quieter tonight than it was yesterday, and yesterday quieter than the day before. Ilse opened her mouth to argue and found nothing to say. He was right. The hollow was changing. She had felt it in her bones, a premonition as old as the soil itself, deepening as the waystones lost their song. The pilgrim's road was not what it had been, and something-something vast and hungry and patient was filling the space they left behind. What happens if it catches you? She asked. Jaren was silent for a long moment. The fire crackled. Outside, the wind shifted, and the hum of the stones faltered just for a breath, just for a heartbeat, and then resumed, weaker than before. I don't know, he said, but I know what happened to the others.
Which others?
The ones your uncle turned away, the ones who didn't listen. He met her eyes. I followed one of them, a woman same as the one on Halloween, veiled, desperate, carrying a bundle wrapped in linen. She paid your uncle in silver 3 coins, just like the ledger says. He refused her at the door. She walked north anyway. I was behind her about a mile back, and I heard the singing stop. Not fade. Stop.
as though someone had cut a string, and then the silence moved forward and I ran south. Ilse felt cold. Not the cold of the stone walls or the winter air, but a cold that started in her stomach and spread outward, reaching for her fingers and toes and the tips of her ears. "Why are you telling me this?" she asked. "Because you're the keeper now, because the road is yours, because whatever is coming for us, it's coming for the road too. And the road needs someone standing at the stones, someone who hasn't forgotten how to listen." Ilse walked back to the window and pressed her forehead against the glass. Her breath fogged the surface, and she watched the condensation spread and drip. Beyond the fog, the darkness was absolute. No stars, no moon, just the black void of a hollow that had swallowed every sound it had ever contained. But she could hear them. The stones, faint, distant, wavering, still singing, still holding. "How long can they hold?" she whispered. Jaren came to stand beside her. He didn't touch her. He simply stood close enough that she could feel his presence, warm and solid and real in a room full of absences. "Not much longer," he said. "The silence eats the stones too, eventually. It starts at the edges. The hum gets thinner. The notes grow uncertain. And then nothing. Just cold rock and cold air and the thing that waits at the end of the road." "What waits at the end of the road?" He looked at her, and in his eyes she saw something that made her throat close. Not fear, not grief, recognition. "I don't know yet," he said, "but I intend to find out." Ilse turned away from the window. She walked to the table and picked up the bundle of letters. She untied the twine and spread the pages across the wood. 7 years of undelivered words. 7 years of messages that had been consumed by the same hunger that followed Jaren north. She read the top one aloud, her voice steady despite the tremor in her hands. "To the steward at Oakhaven. The Baron requires additional grain stores by the first frost. Transport via the Pilgrim's Road is approved." She set it down and picked up the next. "To the steward at Marrow's Ford. The river crossings have been damaged. Route diversion required." And the next. "To the steward at the Northern Way. Supply shipment delayed. Send runners if necessary." Each letter was a thread connecting one place to another. Each letter was proof that the road had once been alive, pulsing with purpose, carrying the weight of 100 small necessities. And each letter was now a ghost, floating in a vacuum where meaning used to live. "They wanted passage," Il said. "They just wanted to get somewhere." Jaren nodded. "That's all anyone ever wants. Passage, a way through." She looked at him, really looked, past the bruises and the tattered cloak and the exhaustion that lived in the lines around his mouth. She saw something Elsa resolve so deep it had become part of his skeleton, a man who had walked 7 years into a hunger that ate sound and light and hope and who had not stopped. Who would not stop? "You should rest," she said. "I can't sleep." "Try." He closed his eyes. His breathing slowed, but Ilse could see the tension in his jaw, the way his fingers dug into the blanket. He was not sleeping. He was waiting. Waiting for whatever was behind him to close the distance. Waiting for the silence to finish its meal. Ilse blew out the candle. The cottage filled with darkness, broken only by the orange glow of the fire. She sat on the stool opposite Jaren, her back straight, her hands folded in her lap, and she listened. The stones hummed. The wind moved through the hollow, the hearth glowed. And underneath it all the gap. The thinning, the silence, patient and hungry, moving closer one breath at a time. Ilse Vane counted the beats between the hums. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The gap was getting longer. She stood, she walked to the door. She drew the iron bolt and opened it. The cold air rushed in, carrying the smell of damp earth and something else, something metallic and old, like the taste of blood on the tongue. She stepped onto the threshold and placed her palm against the nearest waystone. It was cold and solid and patient beneath her fingers. But beneath the cold, she felt it a tremor, faint as a heartbeat, running through the stone from north to south. From the direction Jaren had come, from the direction the silence was moving. Ilse closed her eyes and listened. The hum was still there, barely, fraying at the edges, but there. She let her hand drop and went back inside. She closed the door. She drew the bolt. She sat by the fire and waited for morning. Outside, the hollow held its silence, waiting for the stones to sing again.